Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph for Saturday, January 9th, Sunday, January 10th, and Monday, January 11th. We'll begin with the front page of Saturday, January 9th's Pantograph. The headline reads, ISU-IWU students face COVID tests on return. Students at Illinois Wesleyan and Illinois State Universities faced a lot more tests as they return for spring semester this week, but the tests aren't on coursework, they're COVID-19 tests. Both universities have begun testing students, starting with residential assistants and student athletes. Classes will start Monday at ISU and Wednesday at IWU. ISU listed a total of 1,924 cases of COVID-19 among its students from August 17th through Thursday, with 16 active cases. IWU had a total of 194 cases through November 19th when its semester ended. IWU will resume updates of its dashboard of COVID-19 case statistics once classes start. At IWU, students, regardless of where they live, are required to undergo baseline testing as they did at the start of the fall semester. They will be required to quarantine until notified that their testing results are negative. Anyone who tested positive in the 90 days before the start of spring semester testing can opt out of baseline testing with proper documentation. At ISU, students living in on-campus housing will be required to undergo COVID-19 entry testing as part of the check-in process and will not get their room keys until results are received. Other students are also encouraged to be tested. Because of delays in the University of Illinois receiving federal emergency use authorization for its Shield Illinois test, ISU is shifting to antigen testing, which provides quicker results than the gold standard PCR test, said John Bauer, ISU's COVID-19 testing coordinator. Dr. Christine Nulty, ISU's student health medical director, said processing is done on-site with results available within about 30 minutes. Testing will be done at the former fire station near Cardinal Court and at three residence halls. We encourage anyone on campus to test twice a week, Nulty said. Starting Monday, on-campus testing will also be available for asymptomatic ISU faculty and staff, another change from fall semester. Faculty and staff have been requesting such testing, but the university initially did not have the capacity to provide it, Nulty said. What won't be changing at either IWU or ISU is a continued mixture of online and hybrid classes. Even if the number of COVID-19 cases drops dramatically, ISU spokesman Eric Jones said, once the semester is rolling, I don't think we're going to see any major pivot mid-semester. Most classes will be online at ISU, he said. Delivering classes remotely has been an ongoing learning curve, and faculty members are adjusting as they learn what works best, said Jome. To discourage travel, both universities eliminated spring break from the 2020-2021 academic calendar. Nulty said it's not known when vaccinations will become available for students, but the university has a mass immunization planning committee developing procedures. Initial doses in Illinois are going to healthcare workers and residents and staff of long-term care facilities, followed by frontline essential workers and people over 65. The vaccines have to be stored at extremely cold temperatures. ISU moved a special freezer from the Science Laboratory building to Student Health Services in case it's needed for storage. We are ready to help the county if they need it, said Nulty. Although there was an initial surge in coronavirus cases when students returned to campus last fall, the positivity rate on campus was lower than the community as a whole later in the semester. That shows they, the students, were being responsible, said Bauer. With the state, including McLean County, in the midst of a surge in cases, there is concern. A surge is a surge, whether it's on campus or in the community, said Nulty, and she hopes students act responsibly as they did last fall. In a message to IWU students, Carla Carney-Hall, Vice President of Student Affairs and Dean of Students, and Victoria Falsey, Director of Nursing, reminded students of the threat to campus health only by large social gatherings, but also small gatherings where masks are not worn and physical distancing is not maintained. Party hosts and attendees may face a ban from all activities or suspension from the university if they participate in large gatherings, they said. IWU will allow a 10-person maximum at university-sponsored events and non-class-related activities with mask wearing and physical distancing. It is providing online training to leaders of registered student organizations. And from the local and state page A3, a headline reads, Input Sought on VP Empire, online forum part of Intersections Study. A virtual meeting next week will allow Central Illinois residents to provide input on options for the potential, that is, reconfiguration of the intersection of Veterans Parkway and Empire Street in Bloomington. The meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. Those who cannot attend the meeting can submit their comments and suggestions online beginning next Friday. The Veterans Parkway Interstate 55 Business at Empire Street, Illinois Route 9 Intersection Improvement Feasibility Study has been established to evaluate potential improvements to the intersection, including a redesign. The meeting will not include personnel from IDOT and consultant staff. Exhibits will be explained and will be available for review following the meeting. The meeting will also include a question and answer session and a survey. In 2019, the intersection topped the list with the most crashes in Bloomington, 18, a ranking it has held for the past 5 consecutive years. Figures for 2020 are not yet available. The intersection has no pedestrian crosswalks. In November 2018, a pedestrian died while trying to cross the intersection. The Bloomington Public Works Department is encouraging area residents to participate in the meeting or submit comments after. To register for the event, visit www.veteransparkwayoutreach.com and submit a form. Those who register will receive a Zoom link approximately 1 day before the event. For those unable to attend the virtual public information meeting, the material will be available on www.veteransparkwayoutreach.com beginning January 15th. Comments and responses received through February 15th will become part of the project record. For more information, visit www.veteransparkwayoutreach.com. That's all one word, veteransparkwayoutreach.com. And from tax and police reforms on session agenda, lawmakers return for a lame duck 5-day session. Illinois House lawmakers were back in the capital city Friday for the first time since May, kicking off a 5-day lame duck legislative session. No substantive action was taken in the brief House session Friday, which began with Republican Springs requesting greater access for members of the media in the Bank of Springfield Center, which hosted the session. Only a handful of reporters were allowed on the second level of the 7,700-seat arena due to strict COVID restrictions. The venue is the same as it was in May, but reporters had requested better access to lawmakers on the floor of the Senate. No such expanded access was granted on Friday. Democrats called for a closed-door caucus meeting to discuss an expansive criminal justice reform measure and other priorities of the Illinois Black Legislative Caucus. Prospective candidates to unseat House Speaker Michael Madigan, who has held that position for all but 2 years since 1983, were also scheduled to make their case in the private caucus meeting. Stephanie Kifowit, Democrat of Oswego, Kathleen Willis, Democrat from Addison, and Ann Williams, Democrat Chicago, are the three declared challengers to Madigan. At least 19 members of the House Democratic Caucus have said they will not support Madigan, putting him several votes shy of the 60 needed to retain the gavel. The 102nd session of the General Assembly is set to convene on Wednesday, following adjournment of lame duck sessions, at which point a speaker must be chosen before substantial action can be taken. This was set to convene for a committee on Saturday and full floor on Sunday. Governor J.B. his top priority for the lame duck session, a series of tax changes that he said would save the state about $520 million for this fiscal year. The bulk of that, roughly $500 million, would come from decoupling the state's tax code from the federal tax code so that business tax cuts approved by Congress as part of the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Stimulus, or CARES Act, last year would not automatically reduce Illinois state revenue. Without decoupling, the governor's office said those changes at the federal level would automatically reduce the amount of business income that is taxable by the state of Illinois. Pritzker also announced that he is unilaterally delaying the effective date of certain business tax credits at the Illinois General Assembly 2019, and which were scheduled to take effect January 1st as part of a package known as the Blue Collar Job. Those involved expansions of certain tax credits that businesses could take for relocating to Illinois or expanding existing facilities in the state. Right now, we cannot afford to expand tax breaks to businesses that already receive tax breaks, Pritzker said in a news release. As we recover from the job creation and balancing our state budget. But House Republicans help negotiate the Blue Collar Jobs Act, said Pritzker's actions would hurt small businesses that have been severely affected by the COVID recession, by the recession that is brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, and would ultimately make Illinois less economically competitive. That's precisely the kind of tool we'll need as we emerge from the pandemic and the entire world starts to rebuild the economies that have been so profoundly impacted by the closures. Republican of Dixon said during a news. Meanwhile, in a committee hearing on the BOS Center floor, lawmakers advanced Senate Bill 54, which allows for the home delivery of liquor throughout the state. The bill allows retailers to use third-party groups via phone applications or internet service while removing liability for retailers if those services violate age verification laws. In what comes as a surprise to some members, the committee allowed testimony through video conference, a first for the Illinois House. No one, aside from lawmakers or staff, is otherwise allowed on the BOS Center's floor to testify. The Illinois Craft Brewers Guild testified to ask for an amendment to allow small brewers and distillers to deliver their own products, which the bill does not allow for, despite wineries having those abilities. Also from Representative Miller, a remark citing Hitler. U.S. Representative on Friday apologized for quoting Adolf Hitler at a rally outside the U.S. Capitol earlier this week. Miller, an Oakland Representative, 15th Congressional District, that covers parts of central and southern Illinois, said she regretted making the reference and apologized for the harm it caused. But she also said her words are being twisted antithetical to my beliefs. The full statement reads, earlier this week I spoke to a group of mothers about the importance of faith and guarding our youth from destructive influences. I sincerely apologize for my words caused and regret using a reference to one of the most evil dictators in history to illustrate the dangers that outside influences can have on our youth. This dark history should never be retroactive. True, right, and noble into their children's hearts and minds. While some are trying to intentionally twist my words to mean something antithetical to my belief, let me be clear. I'm Israel, and I will always be a strong advocate and ally of the Jewish community. I've been in discussion with Jewish leaders across the country, and I'm grateful to them for their kindness and forthrightness. Miller spoke at a Save the hosted by the conservative group Moms for America Action on Tuesday, a day before violent supporters of President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol. He was discussing the need to appeal, he said, while reading from a statement. If we win a few elections, we're still going to be losing unless we win the hearts and minds of our children. This is the battle. Hitler was right on one thing. He said, whoever has the youth has the future. A video of her making the statements was posted on social media. Negative response, including a call for her resignation from U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois and a rebuke from officials at Eastern Illinois University, which is in her district. The rally host defended Miller, saying Thursday that the comments were taken out of context. Truth is true. The organization said in a Facebook post, adding that the media owed Miller an apology for misrepresenting her statement. Moms for America President Kimberly Fletcher also referenced the Nazi leader in its defense of Miller. Hitler also said, make the lie big, make it simple, keep saying it, and eventually they will believe it. If we talk about the insidious actions of Hitler, we dismiss the horrific events he incited and open the door for them to be repeated. The media should focus on the truth instead of relentlessly repeating big lies. Miller and U.S. Representative Michael Bost were the only two members of Illinois congressional delegation who voted to reject the certification of Electoral College votes that officially designated former Democratic Vice President Joe Biden as the next president on Thursday. Miller was sworn in Sunday as a new representative from the 15th Congressional District. The district had been represented by John Shimkus, who did not seek re-election. And from Sunday's front, local GOP, end of Trump-era time for reflection. State Senator Jason Berrickman, as the GOP and the United States are a long way from the shining city on a hill that President Ronald Reagan envisioned in his farewell address. The Bloomington Day storming of the U.S. Capitol that resulted in 5 deaths. The riot was an attempt to stop Congress from confirming Biden as the November election winner over President Donald Trump, which it completed hours after the upheaval. A rally just before the Capitol for weeks has been alleging voter fraud, tweeted Friday morning that the people in last year's election will have a giant voice long into the future. Among the Clay County Republicans, the chaos and turmoil of the people is them reevaluating the next steps following the department who has been at the center of orbit since becoming the party's standard bearer in the summer of 2016. Berrickman said, while he doesn't think one person represents the perception of the Republican under Trump's presidency. He has changed those who identify themselves as Republicans. And even today, there are those who firmly are embedded in the notion that anyone who speaks ill of President Trump is not a Republican. There are others throughout this community, but elsewhere, who are declaring they are no longer a Republican, President Trump, Berrickman said. State Republican of matter the political affiliation, it starts with mutual respect and understanding of differences, even within the same party. That's how what we're lacking now, Brady said. Specifically for the President Trump will be a new beginning. He said into a far-left liberal faction and a far-right conservative faction that carry things to an extreme, but it doesn't reach out to the mainstream, and that's what they're missing. McLean County Board Vice Chair Jim Sildner, a Republican representative, wants the GOP to get conservative values. I think some members did lose those values, Sildner said. I think some members, it was a case where all the conservatism, as far as financially or morally, I think some of us were more interested in voting what they felt to win votes. Years after his 2016 victory, candidates across the country. As a result, support for the president has been a critical point. Democrats have framed attacks on Republicans in elections. In the case of U.S. Representative Davis, in November, Deputy Dirksen Londrigan referred to him as a Trump loyalist. The congressman was an honorary chairman of the Trump campaign. He presented himself as someone who works with both parties. Writing his standing in the top 3% of most bipartisan in Congress, as rated by the Lugar Center and Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy. Sildner said Trump has been a dividing factor, and he hopes Republicans uniting the party. McLean County by 3,000 votes in the November election. Davis and local lawmakers who have aligned themselves with Trump's throughout his presidency have condemned the Capitol riot, but most have not gone as far as calling for Trump's removal from office. U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Anaheim, was the first GOP lawmaker to call on Trump to relinquish control, either voluntarily or involuntarily. He remains the only Illinois Republican invoking the 25th Amendment or for impeachment proceedings, which many Democrats have urged, including Governor J.B. Pritzker and Senators Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin. U.S. Republican Darren LaHood said he does not support impeachment or removal. The president has 13 days left in office and will have to watch and monitor over the next 13 days, LaHood told the Peoria Journal Register, Journal Star, that is, on Thursday. The president and his rhetoric keeps getting ramped up, but we all have to be careful about the rhetoric used in LaHood was also an honorary chairman of Trump's 2020 Illinois campaign and later signed onto an amicus brief in support of a Texas lawsuit challenging the election outcome. Another figure who raised questions about voter fraud was McLean County Republican Party Chair Connie Beard, telling the Pantograph in November, "We all want our legal ballots counted." Beard also supported claims from Trump that the election was rigged against him. Last week, the Bloomington Normal Democratic Socialists of America called on her to resign. In the weeks leading up to yesterday's terror in the Capitol, local McLean County Republican Party Chair Connie Beard used her position of leadership within the party to promote and legitimize the lies of widespread election fraud and a stolen presidency that culminated in the attack and loss of life in Washington, D.C., the organization said. Beard, in a statement to the Pantograph, condemned the violence, but said she would not resign. "Joe Biden is president-elect," she said. "I support the Constitution. The decision has been made on the Electoral College, and that transition is going to take place. That is the rule of law working, and I fully support that," said Beard. "I pledge to continue the work of finding good candidates, developing a strong base of volunteers. I will not let threats or attacks sway me from completing my job." The socialist group also called on the Normal Town Council to investigate candidate and talk show host David Paul Blumenschein for organizing a Stop the Steal bus trip to Washington. Blumenschein did not respond to questions from the pantograph. Soldner said the McLean County Republican Party needs to focus on keeping Republicans in county seats. Other local Republicans said GOP simply needs to focus on finding mutual understanding, as do Democrats. I have long said we ought not to treat those who disagree with us as our enemies, Berrickman said. I think it's important we try to understand the many views that people have on various issues of the day. We seek common ground where possible, and we advocate our position through logic and persuasion. That's what a democracy encourages. And also, on page one of Sunday's paper, headline reads, Lee Series Eyes What Makes Good Government. This is a season of new beginnings. A new year, soon to be followed by a new presidential administration, is getting underway. But this quadriennial recalibration of our national government comes at a time when Americans and their lawmakers remain deeply divided. Sometimes those divisions mean gridlock, making it hard to achieve good government, at least in the way our founders intended. While people differ on the definition of good government, they tend to agree on several fundamentals, that it be accountable, effective, and efficient. With those goals in mind, Lee Enterprises is partnering with InsideSources.com to bring you a year-long series on the building blocks of our government. For the first entry, a look at executive orders, C8, will examine a specific aspect of our civic life each month, how it was envisioned, and how it works or doesn't today. We'll even share a short, fun quiz to test your knowledge on the subject. The series is also an excellent opportunity for young readers to develop a better understanding of what's happening in Washington and how it affects them. We think the objective of good government is worth exploring because it's more than a slogan. It's an ideal our founders envisioned as ensuring Americans' quality of life. More than 210 years ago, Thomas Jefferson wrote of the connection, the care of humans and not their destruction is the first and only objective of good government. If you voted in November's election, then you participated in our system of government. Now it's up to elected officials who serve we the people to fulfill those other requirements of good government. Falling to new lows. Many Americans no longer believe that they will. Because of the length of the article on executive orders, I will read that in the second half hour of our reading on the right after the obituaries, coming up in just a few minutes. This is Rita Schulte, and I've been reading the first half hour of excerpts from the Bloomington from Saturday, January 9th, Sunday, January 10th, and Monday, January 11th. I'll be right back in just a few moments with the second half hour from the pantograph. So please.